on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Very good evening to you, wherever you may be. It's Andy Gilson just sitting in tonight for Glenn, who will be ringing in, hopefully, in the not-too-distant future. Unfortunately, he had to turn around. He was caught in some terrible traffic earlier, and his estimated arrival time was about 8 o'clock tonight, which was ridiculous. So he's turned around, gone home, and he'll be ringing in, hopefully, in a few moments' time. Joining me in the studio, though, as published, was Stuart Minchin. How are you, Stu?
I'm very good, thank you.
Very happy.
You're very happy.
Yeah, good.
Good. You're looking happy.
Good.
Yeah, he's a big smile. And you're on TV. If you want to watch on Mixcloud, folks, you can watch the
yeah,
show.
Yeah, you really don't want to.
I don't know. They've got a face for radio, Stuart. And,
yeah,
hopefully, this could be Glenn Wilkie on the end of the line. Are you there, Glenn?
I am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. How are you?
Yeah. I don't think I can swear on the radio. I've just spent 2.5 hours looking at number plates.
Well, I'll just introduce Terry Howard to the listeners. And hi, Tel, how are you?
Yeah, I'm not quite as happy as Stuart, but I think I'm happier than Glenn.
Yeah, well, you only had to come from Romford, didn't you?
Yeah.
So it wasn't too bad for you. What I'm going to do is pass over to Glenn and Stu, and you can start the show off. Glenn, now you're there.
Oh, thanks very much. I've not even got my coat off yet, but brilliant. I'm not sure what you've done so far, but...
We said hello, mate. That's all we've done.
We've done that. Brilliant, brilliant. Obviously, coming up on the show tonight, we've got ex-captain fantastic John Mackey calling in to discuss his career, amongst other things. Obviously, we've got Terry Howard in the studio. Welcome, Tel. Nice to...
Evening, mate. Nice to hear you.
And obviously we'll be hearing from Dave Victor following last night's game at Cholton, I believe. But before all that, Stuart, how are you?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, all the better for hearing you as well.
Too kind, too kind. How are you feeling after the last couple of games, mate? Two cup games, two losses?
Yeah, it's never good to lose games, is it? You know, from a positive, still finished top of the group last night, still went through, got a home tie in the next round. I didn't think it was actually as bad as the meltdown on social media came through. You know, we lost.
Was there one? I didn't see that.
Yeah, I think there was a bit of one, which was normal when Orient lose a game, to be honest. So, but I don't think the performance actually was that bad. There was individual mistakes and errors, which we keep having in games, unfortunately, and we keep getting punished for them. But I thought there were some good, half-good performances out there last night with a different system that the guys hadn't played before. So,
Do you think the system last night? I didn't watch the game. I was busy. But do you think the system was put together purely because of the personnel that they had available, or do you think Voss was trying a few things out maybe for future games?
I think it was a mixture of both, personally. I think last night, people like James Dayton had a bit more freedom, and as the game went on, actually was probably his best game this season, or the best he's played for a long time. He probably won't mind me saying that. I thought Josh Wright wasn't that bad, to be honest. I thought that was probably one of his better performances as well. And again, obviously we had Hector, who was very, very good, which he reminds me quite a bit of Stephen Alzate, actually, from a ability point of view. He's just got a bit more, you know, he's a bit of a bigger guy, more in the mould of Dan Happ. So I think he holds his own in there, and probably wouldn't be a surprise if he actually retained his place for Saturday. I think, you know, you look at the back, the defence, again, individual errors, Sam Ling for the first one, Jamie Turley for the second one or third one. And I think that's the thing that lets us down the most is individual errors. And those players weren't awful last night by any stretch. So, and Terry was in the studio. Terry watched it as well. And, you know, Terry probably has a slightly different opinion to me, but well worth seeing what Terry thinks.
I agree mostly with what you said, Stuart. I think that it wasn't... I didn't think it was a terrible performance. I mean, if you look at the stats, and then we know that goals are the most important thing, but I think we had 17 attempts on goal last night, something like that. We created chances. I thought we grew into the game. It was a very slow start, first 15 minutes. The big plus for me for the night was the young lad, Kyprianou, who looked so assured in there for a man, or a boy even, of that age, so confident. And, you know, we know from, me and Glenn would know from when we sort of made our debuts and playing as young men, to have that level of confidence at such a young age is such an asset.
Cal, I think you're right. I was fortunate enough to be at the FA Cup game against Newport on Saturday, and I had a chat with Ross Embleton before the game, and just talking about the team lineup and that, and he said to me, "Have you seen Hector play before?" And I said, "No." He said, "Keep your eye on him, watch him." He said, "He is absolutely brilliant." And I thought, that's interesting. If he's that good, why has he not played before or much this season? But obviously he's had injuries and he's been getting in there, and Cisse's got brought in the summer, and he's been in there. He said, "Watch him, he's so talented for such a young lad. He's got a big, big future." And saying that, watching him on Saturday against... Okay, last night was Charlton's sort of reserve youth team mixture against the first team players of Newport County, who are top of League Two and flying high. He actually, when he was on the ball, he was so confident, and he sort of took two or three people out of the game at once and opened things up. On the ball, I thought he was absolutely superb. Without the ball, defensive-wise, he didn't really get to grips with the position as much, but maybe he could have done with a bit more help in there. But certainly after Saturday's game, I thought he was superb, and I'm really pleased he played well last night.
Yeah, I think my feeling is he might start on the bench at the weekend, but in the very near future, he's pushing now for a place, and I think he's going to be a fixture in this team if he continues like that. I mean, as we said, I watched him last night. He can play with his back to the game, accept the ball very comfortably. Right, he can go right and go left. He opened up players. You said he did Saturday by going past players. He's got that little bit turn of pace. And, you know, looking at him last night, he reminded me a little bit, not quite the same type of player, but Chris Bart Williams was as a young lad, you know, so confident on the ball, you know, powerful. You know, as I said, the sky could be the limit for the kid.
Yeah, what annoyed me a little bit on Saturday was the defence. He was getting in good positions to get the ball off of them, and it was almost like they didn't trust him. They didn't trust him enough to give him the ball more frequently than he got it. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I think maybe if Dan Appy was in there, he might have given the ball a bit more. But the two centre-halves who played Saturday, it was almost like, we don't want to give it to you there just in case you lose it, thinking on the negative, rather than if we give you the ball here, you could start opening things up. That was the only thing, not his fault, but I just think with the defence on Saturday against Newport, they should have given the ball a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, he wasn't shying away from it last night. I mean, what was nice to see, I saw him at one stage, I think Jamie Turley was on the ball and he had a bit of space to run into Jamie Turley. And he was actually going, you see him saying, get up, you know, run with the ball. So he doesn't seem like he's shy. He seemed to be fitting in well out there. So, and as you say, with the... with that trust issue, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But you know, the more he plays, I'm sure that in training, they know what he's capable of. So, You know, I don't think it probably would be a trust issue. But you say if that
maybe the defence just wanted a breather, though, just boot it up the other end.
I know that feeling.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. So we're thinking you guys are thinking he could possibly start on the bench on Saturday. I'm going to stick my neck on the line here and think. I'm going to say he starts. I know Cisse's had, or Sissy, whatever way you want to call him, he's had two games off now, hasn't he? So I think he's done enough to warrant a place in the side.
I think I'm going to go with Terry and say he's going to be on the bench. Again, you know, Colchester at Southend last night for six. Colchester are, barring their FA Cup loss, you know, it's a different opposition again, isn't it? Different intensity of a league game. Ross may feel a bit more confident, maybe, with having Cisse back in there with Joby and Craig Clay. I guess we'll find out at 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon.
I think if he thought that, I think Newport are a better side than Colchester. I know it was a cup game. I think he's held his own and done well against Newport. I don't think there's a problem in Ross's mind that he can play at that level. It's just being brave enough to stick him in.
I think I agree with what you said, Glenn. I think he's done enough to merit a place in the starting lineup. But as Stu said, maybe because it's a league game, might just protect is the right word, but he might just go with the experience to start with. But he's certainly putting pressure on them boys in the middle of the park. You know, there's plenty of competition for places as there is. But for me, you know, if he doesn't start this week, it can only be a matter of, you know, a game or two before he does.
And I think he got game time last season as well, didn't he? A few opportunities last year. And again, it wasn't someone that you thought he was struggling to fit in at that time even. And now we're what, 8 months further on now. He's back to full fitness. You know, the kid's got natural ability. So, like Terry said, I don't think it will be long before he does get an opportunity and gets a run in the side as well. I guess what we've got to be, just purely from a negative point of view, is... you could argue that the second goal against Newport on Saturday was partly his fault for not being maybe close enough, tight enough to the fella that then run off him and then had the shot and scored. But you know, we're almost making individuals on a game-by-game basis anyway.
Sure, he's recovered into the box with a different runner before the ball's gone out to that man. And when he's come out, he's not put the brakes on enough and the guy's just mugged him off and sent him. But I understand what you're saying. I'll tell you what, we'll have a little pan bet. I'm gonna say he starts Saturday. You're saying he's not. Next time I see you in the studio, you can hand me the money.
No problem, mate.
It's a good job you didn't ask me, Glenn, because you know I'm very much against betting. You know that, don't you?
I know. I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to say anything, Phil, but I just thought, I'm not seen this in 20 years.
For sure you'd win anyway. Nothing's changed my luck, mate.
Stu, on another point, and for you, Phil, because you'll be able to answer this. How concerning was it as an ex-player, as a supporter, not to be seeing the best possible team out on Saturday in the FA Cup? Because talking to Matt Porter before the game on the TV, he was saying how important the finances are coming in at this time when there is a lack of finance in football and gave receipts to get through to the next round. Okay, it's a new pool. It wasn't a mud team where we could get away with it. Resting players for league games, I understand the reasoning for that, but it was an important cup game as well. Are you concerned that we didn't play our best team for that?
What I couldn't understand is, with the game last night, you can fully understand resting players, giving boys a few minutes who haven't been playing. But as you say, FA Cup is... it might not be as important for the big boys anymore, but it's always important to the lower division and non-league clubs, because purely of the financial aspect, you know, especially in the current times. And listen, going back to when I was playing, and that was a different time, a different era, we always played our strongest side in the Cup. And bearing in mind, he had a game last night where he could, as I say, he could play some of the boys who've been on the periphery. I can't understand why he didn't play his strongest side on Saturday.
I mean, yeah, do you think... Because of the size, Glenn.
Two or three injuries or knocks from the Tuesday night at Forest Green. So I knew he had to make two or three changes, but additionally, he's put another two and he's made five changes from Tuesday on Saturday.
I know Terry touched on it a bit last night, that we've got a big squad as well, and players need game time, they need minutes. But even if you then revert back to last night, Sam Ling hasn't featured in, what, six or seven games, or the last six or seven games, roughly. And that may have showed a little bit last night. And I'm not saying his performance was bad, but in some of the individual errors, like on the first one and then maybe on the third one or the second one where he got caught ball watching a bit. And I'm not being critical, but would that have happened if he'd have had a regular run in the team? I don't know, because I've not played at that level, so for me, I can't say genuinely it makes no difference if he'd been out for six games or he'd played six games on the trot. But I would wonder if it's too much then for someone to come in that situation. And again, changes were made on Saturdays that we had James Dayton had come in after not featuring for so many games. You know, Josh Wright came in who had not featured necessarily in so many games. And I'm not so sure personally if it helps.
He played Tuesday.
Yeah, no,
night.
He did. Yeah, sure, no, he'll finish.
All I would say with Ling is, okay, he's not been in the side. He's probably got the ump over it and feels that he deserves a place. If you get your chance, and hopefully Terry will back me up on this, all right, you might be aggrieved at not starting, but when you get your chance and you're playing against lesser opposition, so to speak, you want to do your best you can and you want to concentrate every single minute of that game and try not put a foot out of place, or you want to do so well because you want to give the manager a headache for the league game coming up.
I am, it's 100% right, Glenn. I watched a bit of the Northampton-Oxford City game the night before, and I think Keith Kerr was like bemoaning the fact that he'd given these boys a chance. And they basically blew it. He said, I've had their agents on the phone. They've been saying, I want my chance. He said, they've made my job easy for me. He said, because none of them are going to get in on that performance. So, yes, you, when you get these chances, I said, even if you don't break your way and you've got to have a good game, so you're in the manager's thoughts still. So he thinks, yes, I can put him in if we have an injury or someone loses form. You know, and with Sam last night, he didn't have a terrible game, but two of the goals were down to him, you know. And obviously, it is difficult when you come in and you've got to do your best for 90 minutes. But as I say, I don't think he could. He'll be knocking on Rossi's door anytime soon, you know, after last night.
No.
I mean, one of the things I would point out from last night,
yeah,
we didn't have a recognised centre-forward playing, which, again, that... For me personally, I always kind of get a few alarm bells that ring with me when that happens. I get it. I understand Danny Johnson's played a lot of minutes, has had a lot of game time, and taking him out last night may not have been a bad thing. But I don't think that necessarily then helped us at the top end of the pitch, maybe. Although Louis Dennison, all fairness to him, you know, grew into the game, and I thought his performance was quite positive, to be fair. But is that the answer to then not have a recognised centre-forward out there? You wouldn't see many other teams being like that.
Yeah, do you know what, Stu? Like Terry said, it's a nothing game last night. We've qualified. They've not qualified. They've made changes. We need to, like Terry said, give players minutes on the pitch. And part of me thinks that's why we've gone with the system we played last night, was to accommodate them guys, just to give a lot of people time off. But that's the team we've got available. They're the guys we want to give minutes to. Let's get a system to suit them the best we can. Okay, we haven't got forwards, and there's a few forwards with injuries who couldn't step in. Whereas if we had a fully fit squad, there would have been a couple who would have played, arguably. But with Louis Dennis, on Saturday, the first 20 minutes, he impressed me so much. He was a bit of a world beater on the left wing. But the problem I see with him, he does a lot of his work in the middle third of the pitch, and then when he gets into the final third, he goes to pieces.
Yep.
And he's not as productive, you know. And
it's interesting you say that, Glenn, because we noticed last night in the first 15, 20 minutes, he kept coming deep for the ball. So there was no real... When the ball was getting up into them forward areas, he was so deep and come for it that we didn't really have an out ball or someone to aim for up there, you know.
Yeah.
And in the final third, I think he missed a great chance, didn't he, when the ball came across?
Yeah.
I think it
took a bit of an unfortunate bounce just before
it might have been the defender... he might have been got a little touch it, but, you know, it was still a great chance. So it's interesting you say, like, in that final third, he's not producing his best work.
Yeah, on Saturday he obviously played in midfield on the left side, and Tell is I don't know if you saw the game or not. He's nutmeg the fullback, gone past him, chopped it inside, passing the ball, and then when he gets in and around the box, he gives the ball away too much, or he's got no end product, or he's not decisive enough with what he wants to do, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's a mental thing in his head, or it's the way he's been coached, or not now, obviously previously, but. He's got so much potential, but it just breaks down in that final third for him.
Yeah, it was noticeable in the early stages last night. But as Stu said, he didn't have a bad game. You know, when he stayed higher up the pitch, it created a bit more space for the midfielders to work in. In that first sort of 15, 20 minutes, it was all very congested in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what would you say, Glenn, to Jordan Maguire-Drew's performances in the last couple of games?
Well, like I said, I didn't see last night. Obviously, he didn't feature on Saturday, did he? I don't think he did.
No, maybe he didn't, no.
No, he didn't. And then, obviously, he didn't feature at Forest Green last Tuesday.
No.
Or did he come on as a late sub? I can't remember now.
Yeah. I mean, whether that's the prime example of, like, we're just talking about Sam and that, because I felt last night... He flattered to deceive, and I'm not being critical. Don't know, obviously, the circumstances with him individually, but I thought he kind of went missing in a huge amount of the game. And again, that's my personal opinion. And I guess when you're looking for him being in the position he was playing last night, it's always then very difficult.
Yeah, thinking back to, I think the last game I saw him feature in was the Exeter game on the Tuesday night. When we drew 1-1, when he got the ball, he looks really dangerous. He sort of, whether he plays on the right or the left, he cuts in or beats his man, and he's got such a fantastic delivery, whipping the ball into really dangerous areas. The problem I see with him is when he doesn't have the ball and what he offers the team when he doesn't have the ball. And then that's possibly where there's frustration with the coaching staff or whoever it is, why he's not getting as much game time as he probably should. But when he's got the ball, he's a world beater.
Yeah, I mean, undoubtedly, he's got a lot of ability.
Yeah, we were discussing him last night, and he to me at the moment is best coming off the bench as an impact player, you know, because he can do what you just said. He can deliver a great ball. He has got a trick, you know. But when he starts, as you say, I think luxury would be a bit too far to go with him. But as you say, his work rate probably isn't enough team-wise.
Yeah, no, completely right, Tal. Completely right. I've totally gone off subject. I think I saw you once over at Billingsgate a few years back.
Yeah.
In the cafe in the morning, and I've not seen you since you departed the O's. I just want to say how gutted I was, actually, at the time when you left the club. Obviously not as gutted as you, but I was gutted, and it was a real surreal moment for me because you went out the door, and I don't know if you know this or not. But
you took my 7 training number, didn't you?
I know, I didn't take it, I was given it. I was, you're in the first team dressing room, and I was like, okay. Walked in, there you go, there's your peg, number 7. And I was looking, I was thinking, I can't take Terry's squad number. I was getting choked up. I was thinking, I can't take Terry's squad number, especially after what's happened, being in the changing room.
I forgive you. Like, I know for 25 years this has been on your mind.
It really has.
On that note, Glenn, I think what we've got to do now, Glenn, is say bye to you for a minute so that we can get on and speak to Dave Victor.
An emotional goodbye.
Yeah, an emotional one. We'll catch up with you again shortly.
Oh, man. All right. See you later,
Jeff. Cheers, Glenn. Cheers, mate.
That's nice to hear from Glenn. Thanks, Stuart. Yeah, let's just get Dave's thoughts after last night's match with Charlton Athletic, shall we?
Two cup games, two defeats and two disappointing defensive displays, but one standout performer, Hector Kyprianou, at 19 years of age. What a prospect, what a presence, what a player, what a goal on Saturday against Newport County. But it will be the defensive lapses that will concern Ross Embleton on his birthday on Tuesday, of course, as he looks ahead to Saturday and the trip to Colchis United, who have just hit Southend United for six. At least Ross Embleton and Danny Sender will have some time now on the training ground, because we don't have a midweek game for a while, and I think he needs it, because there are too many defensive lapses, particularly from set pieces, particularly from mistakes. But on Tuesday night, there were some good performances, not only from Kyprianou, but also from Jordan Thomas and Jaden Sweeney. It was the youngsters who were setting the example. It was interesting also to see Louis Dennis and the new formation that Ross Embleton tried. I suppose it was the opportunity to experiment, because Lake Noyance are through to the next round of the Papa John's Trophy. But disappointment in the FA Cup. But we focus on the league. We go up to Colchester United. It's one of those games that the faithful really love, and they'll be missed on Saturday.
Thanks for that, Dave. And hopefully, we've got John Mackey on the end of the line. Hello, John.
How are you doing?
I'm all right, my friend. And we're in the studio. We've had a bit of change of staff here because, as I explained to listeners, Glenn caught in traffic earlier and had to turn back to home. So we've got Terry Howard sitting opposite me in the studio, and another central defender, and Stuart Minchin. And so they're all here with us in the studio. And I know that you've been offered a fantastic contract, which we'll come to later. It's a contract like no other from Mr. Cove. Yes, we'll come to that later on, John.
Okay.
But so you've been keeping yourself busy, have you, during the lockdown? And you're still working, aren't you?
Yeah, it's been really busy in the shop. The store's been a little bit quieter in Camden, just due to the fact that loads of offices are still off. But the shop in Highbury has been really busy all the way through lockdown. We've been open. Home deliveries have been, gone through the roof. So, can't complain.
Well, that's at least somebody's earning some money anyway. Good.
Yeah,
good for you.
That's right. Thank you.
It's a tough time for everybody at the moment. I know that. But let's go back to your career, John, because, at the moment, I know you're looking to get into management, aren't you?
Yeah. Left Potts Bar in pre-season. Sort of feel that I've done my apprenticeship with, like, being Gary Alexander's assistant for 3 or 4 years and then Potter's Bar's assistant last year. Feel just I need to sort of give it a go myself and see if I'm any good at it and see if I enjoy it. So, that's the next step I'm looking to take.
Well, I mean, as a club captain, which you were, that surely puts you in good stead and probably shows you probably made of the right stuff to be a manager, doesn't it?
I think so. Just from the fact that the boys I've sort of been assistant manager to, they've all, like, once I sort of put the tweet out, said I was going to try my hand at it, they was so positive with it. And like being captain at basically all the clubs I've played for, you sort of have that leadership, I suppose, and you have a say in the changing room. Maybe sometimes, more than the manager, sort of on the pitch, for sure. I think what I have the leadership qualities, it's just obviously getting a chance and trying to put it into place.
Of course, the difficulty you've got, of course, I mean, having a long full-time pro career, and the same as Terry sitting opposite us and Stevie Castle as well, you suddenly drift into the non-league and it's a totally different ball game, isn't it? And contracts sometimes aren't worth the paper they're written on, and things like that can happen. And, Terry's sitting opposite me, he, the same as you, he went into non-league and did a bit of assistant managing with Alan Hole at Great Wakering. And it's a difficult time, Terry, isn't it, to step up?
Yeah, I mean, pro game and non-league game are worlds apart. It's like the wild, wild west at times, and I'm sure John knows that. And as I say, as enjoyable as it is, it's a thankless task. But I don't want to put you off. I know you know you're going eyes wide open because obviously you've been involved with Gary and that at Greenwich, wasn't it, and a couple other places. So you know exactly what it entails. But you know, it's such hard work being a manager of a non-league side. There's so much you have to do, and probably the last thing sometimes that you get to do is pick the team and coach the boys.
It's
unexpected, isn't it?
You're like just watching sort of Gary. You know, when he was manager, and like Lee last year at Potter's Bar, I mean, they went beyond what they had to do. I think like they was doing the pitches sometimes, and you know, the training, the training facilities and the kit, and you know, obviously everyone sort of pitches in and helps out. But yeah, it's one of them things. I look at it and think, shall I, shan't I? But I think it's always going to be like picking at me, thinking, you know, I've got to give it a try. And like you say, if it's to be, it will be. If not, then at least I can say that I've give it a go.
Well, you're one of those people who know that firsthand that if at first you don't succeed, it can come good in the end, because you started your footballing life, if you like, as an apprentice with West Ham. Now, that didn't work out for you, and it ended up in the with Crawley in the non-league, didn't you?
Well, I didn't actually get an apprentice with West Ham. I got released just before the apprenticeships got handed out, so I got released at 15. And then they had like sort of loads of trials with pro clubs, never got anything, just got always the same sort of, you're as good as what we got, but not better. And then obviously you get a bit disillusioned with it. I end up playing pub football for a year or two over Hackney Marshes with like my local, you know, my pals growing up, and then got a chance to go down to sort of Crawley with, Vic Akers was the assistant manager and Colin Pates was the manager. So yeah, it was
Well, you got spotted by Alan Pardew of all people, and over to Reading. Now, how did you hear a lot of things about Alan Pardew? How did you find him as a manager?
I really liked him, but obviously it's a people ask me all the time that, you know, is he flash? Is he arrogant? He loves himself, etc. But what I would say that when sort of Pards, he was reserve manager at Reading at the time when Mark McGee was there. And then Mark McGee got the sack. He took over as caretaker manager. Thought he was going to get the job, and then they give it to Tommy Burns. Tommy Burns come in and basically got rid of him. And he sort of was doing the knowledge at the time. Didn't work out for Tommy Burns. Majeski sort of phoned back Pardew and said, we've made a mistake. We want you to be the manager. Anyway, he took the manager's job. So from that point of view, he sort of began to be so single-minded that he didn't really care who got in his way, and sometimes it came across as arrogant or, you know, sort of overconfidence maybe, but he was just like, well, you know, they got rid of me once, I'm doing it my way, and if anyone ain't happy with it, then so be it. So I think that's where it come from, that he sort of just wanted to do it as best as you can and hopefully be successful, which it was.
Yeah, I mean, you had a successful time there as well. And, how did the move to Orient come about?
So Pardew left to go to West Ham, and then Steve Coppell come in. Bit of irony, really, because Coppell wanted to sign me when he was Brentford manager the season before. But when he come in, played a few games, but there was probably two or three centre-halves in front of me. Contract was coming to, was going to be up at the end of the season. Sort of went and just saw him, just said, like, what will the situation be at the end of the season? He was honest, said, like, I probably won't offer you nothing. And I was like, okay, can I sort myself out sort of ASAP instead of waiting until like everyone's up at the end of the season and, you know, sort of fighting for to get a club. So that's basically what happened. Had an agent at the time, and he sort of, I didn't want to, you know, sort of, I didn't want to move up north or anywhere, so it was like it sort of limited the clubs that he could speak to for me. I think I spoke to Orient, Barnet, Stevenage at the time, maybe Dagenham, I think there were the four. And yeah, just had a chat with Martin, and just, you know, got a good feel for the place straight away, and then, you know, signed sort of, I think it was the end of 04 season.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you end up as the club captain, and not many people win promotion with Leighton Orient. We're fortunate to have you on the phone and Terry in the room, and both of you have sampled that. I mean, Terry had the pleasure of getting promoted at home. You had to do it at Oxford in, we always say, probably the most surreal football match I've ever seen. How was it as a player? People must have asked you that before, because for us spectators watching that, You've never, ever seen anything quite like it.
Yeah, well, leading up to it, it was, we didn't really make much of it, to be honest. We sort of, like, the week was normal for training. For me, when it hit, when we pulled into, like, sort of the ground in the coach, and just, like, there was just thousands of Orient fans, like, everywhere. And that's when it sort of hit and thought, wow, this is a little bit more important than a normal game. And then obviously going out for the warm-up and, you know, seeing that whole stand full of Orient was, you know, it was something special.
It was, that last minute or so, as we say, that cheer went up, didn't it, for an equalising goal for Northampton in the last minute at Grimsby. And
That's right.
Obviously at that time, for people who are maybe too young to remember or too old and they've forgotten, it was, with a minute to go, it was Grimsby who were going to be promoted, and we were sent into the playoffs. And of course, Oxford were still going to be relegated, and that cheer went up for the equalising goal for Northampton, and we were up, but obviously in the same moment, I think everybody on the Oxford side, I felt they lost concentration for a second, and that ball was played forward, and Lee Steele got in there and you know, sealed the victory, really. But it was, I say, the most surreal match I've ever commentated on. I know that, and I can't believe you would have played in a more remarkable one yourself.
Well, saying it, I didn't play in it, but when I was at Reading, it went to exactly the same thing.
Oh, the playoff final.
Last game of the season, we had to go to Brentford to get at least a draw to go up, and we did. So it was like a bit of deja vu, but obviously I never sort of played in that game. I got injured the game before, so never actually took part in it. But yeah, for that game and the ending, like even you just talking about it, sort of, you get a shiver down your back, sort of just thinking of that moment when Steely puts it in and everyone just goes ballistic. And
I think you're saying about, like, Oxford lost concentration. I think there was about four Orient players could have put that ball in the net, wouldn't they? When I've seen the goal, like, where was the Oxford defence?
It was like a conga, wasn't it?
Yeah, me and Gabby at the back, and everyone's just gone and thought, oh, we need a score, sort of thing. And they, talk about a counter-attack, we was gone.
Yeah, and I remember coming on the pitch to interview at the end, and I've got to say, you know when someone's given everything they've got, because you looked absolutely shattered. You completely drained when I talked to you. And I think literally everyone was out on their legs, really. They were just running on batteries power, really, on the adrenaline, weren't they, at the end there?
Yeah, it was. I mean, everyone went and celebrated with Steely. I stayed back. I thought, like, you know, there's no way I'm running 50 yards to celebrate, to run 50 yards back, take those they want to score again, sort of thing. I was more worried about letting no more goals in. So
we'd been a victim of a terrible assault just beforehand, hadn't you? That involved
yeah,
the centre.
Exactly, yeah, we won't go into that.
Oh dear. So anyway, so that, I mean, you got the promotion with Orient at the end of 07. You've made the move to Brentford. Now, originally you were supposed to be the club captain there, weren't you? 2-year contract.
Spoke to Lingy at the end of that season. You know, there wasn't going to be anything offered, which obviously was sort of, you know, disappointing. Same again, didn't really want to move sort of from where I live, so it sort of obviously narrowed down the clubs again. I spoke to Barnet and I spoke to Brentford. Terry Butcher was sort of the manager there. You know, obviously, you know, a hero of probably everyone's sort of, you know, sort of 10 years ago or whatever it was. And he spoke so well, wanted me to be his captain. You know, just everything sort of sounded great. Got there, he said that we was going to start once. He got me and I think it Lee Thorpe signed straight away. He said, like, we'd sort of build a team around you. They'd got relegated the season before from League One to League Two, so they wanted to sort of bounce straight back up. But the signings never really came. All we got was sort of like loans from Championship sides who were like kids, basically. And we couldn't compete against sort of, you know, strong League Two teams. We got sort of, you know, beat up most weeks, really, physically, mentally. And it wasn't a great start. Fans sort of turned a little bit on the manager, then turned on me, obviously being captain. Probably had a little bit to do with my Orient connection as well, that they probably didn't take to me as much. And yeah, it just didn't work out. It was got to a stage where I picked up an injury, and it was just really, I made my mind up that would probably be it. And that was sort of the Christmas period of that season. Yeah, so I lasted about 4 or 5 months, if that.
Yeah, it's a shame, but you know, contracts come, contracts go, but we've been sent a contract here from Stortford.
Stortford
Swifts. I think there's been a late offer from Haringey Borough, according to Glenn Wilkie. But this has been sent in by Billy Cove. So we said we'll put it to you on air, and you can accept or decline.
Okay.
I know they're hanging on, and you know, he's probably got he's on his knees praying at the moment, Billy. But he said a contract offer for late Orient legend John Mackie for Stortford Swifts. So by signing this contract, Mr. Mackie will be entitled to the following: the Gaffer's car park space, Fenywell making the worst cup of tea he's ever tasted every game. He can cut as many pairs of socks as he likes, up to a total of 5 pairs per season. He can have the XXL shorts. The 6 shirt is XL, the 5 is L. He can choose which one looks better. He will be exempt from ever going into the middle of the rondo. He can tweet, happy with my own performance, even if we lose 17-0. He will receive 2 cans of warm Fosters and a chunky Kit Kat from the chairman after each game. Add a bag of prawn cocktail crisps if we win. He can take penalties, free kicks, throw-ins and corners. Can be added to the management group chat. Gaffer will buy his boots as long as they are Sondico specials from Sports Direct. Is exempt from all George's runs. Exempt from training. Captain for any cup finals. Please, can you accept or decline on air, John? It's an offer
what
like no other.
What do you want? Brilliant offer. Brilliant. I don't drink Fosters, though.
You need the agent back, don't you, to deal with that one, John?
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you what I might do. I might go on trial and see for himself if he wants to sign me. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, how long since you play in these legend matches, don't you? So how long since you actually
played a couple of legend matches. The last competitive game, I think I played a couple of games for Tooting. That's probably about 10 years ago. So
right.
Yeah, I've not done a lot, to be honest.
We'll have to wire you up to the mains and give you a bit of a boost.
Yeah, but, exactly.
Listen, John, lovely to speak to you, and all the best, mate. And I hope you get this this management opportunity. When you see sides like Southend, and you know, they're letting in pretty much four or five a game, aren't they? And you see, you think, well, they've got all these defensive problems, and we've got people like yourself and Adrian Whitbread. I think I tweeted this earlier. You know, qualified coaches and people who know how to defend and how to set up a defence sitting at home, and you think this is like criminal, really. I mean, surely that clubs like this should be bringing in people like you, even if it's for two or three times a week, you know, to try and sort out their problems.
Yeah, I mean, like, you like to think there'd be more opportunities out there for, you know, I think teams are sort of, you know, doing sort of forward play, midfield play, and like the defensive side of things, but yeah, it's a difficult one, and you don't know sort of what sort of budgets and how many staff they can have, and who they've actually got there at the moment, sort of thing. But yeah, it's a difficult situation. I think I'll just wait for my non-league team to come and get me and see what I can do.
Yep, you get the car park space anyway, so that'd be good. Listen, John, lovely to speak to you. We'll catch up soon, mate, and thanks for phoning in.
No problem.
Take care.
I'll speak to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was nice to hear from him. And the pitfalls of non-league football, Terry, and you know, it's so difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, going back to what I was saying, I mean, when I was with Alan Hull at Great Wakering, I just got very much the better end of the deal. I got to coach the boys. Alan, you know, we were just saying he would have to deal with the finances, he'd have to deal with sorting a coach out. He'd have to deal with the chairman, you know, trying to get players in, and it was non-stop, it was constant. And when you think, I think me and Al, there were weeks where we didn't even get paid. We had a budget, and if the players that we played involved took up the budget, we weren't even getting any money for it. But you know, this is it. You do it for the love of it, and you have to, because as I say, at that level, the financial side of it is not going to make it pay for you.
Yeah, I mean, I remember speaking to the manager at the time of Hythe in Kent, and it was Tim Dixon. I think he's at Canterbury now or somewhere like that. But he said he's got players on £10, he's got players on £100. Mm. And that Saturday they were playing, I think, Folkestone. And he said, they're in the same division, they're on £400 a week each, he said, you know. So that's a sort of, I've got players on a tenner playing against £400 players. So it's a bit like Orient taking on Arsenal, you know. Well, I mean, it's the same sort of equivalent.
It doesn't matter how far down the pyramid you go or how far up it, you have the same problems. You know, you look at the Premiership with the big boys, the so-called Big Six with their finances, whatever, and you've got teams trying to compete with that at the Premiership level. It's the same at non-league, you know, all relative. You say, if you've got boys on £400 a week, and that's more than what you're paying your whole squad.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be an advantage, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very difficult. Now, talking of money, Stuart, the club's printed something up about the season tickets with a bit of a rebate, etc. Now, it's an offer from the club to sort of, you know, give some money back to supporters, but there is a sort of big black hole there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I think when you look at it, and it probably affects families more, or anyone that's got more than one season ticket who has got a code for a stream and are only using one stream, whereas you're probably not going to get the value back, or you're not getting value for your season tickets now. I think it's great in some respects that the club recognise the fact that, you know, there is a shortfall, that fans have been incredibly loyal at a very, very difficult time, and have offered a rebate, which I think could... Anyone over £230 a season ticket, which equates to £10 a home game, and then you'll get some form of money back. I've not looked at the finer detail of it, because I need to look at it, but I think if you look, initially, your initial thoughts is, I've got four season tickets, don't sit in my season ticket seat ever, but still buy a season ticket, happy to do so. But I'm only using one code at the moment to stream at home, so we're all watching the game, four of us, one code. There's three codes not being used, three streams, if you like, and three lots of £10 that then we're not spending the money, or we've spent the money on the season ticket, but we're not actually getting value. So I don't know if that's something that Danny will look at in a much bigger picture with it coming out today, that it does affect obviously a lot of people, and people are not obviously getting some value in it. Personally, I wouldn't want any money back. I don't want any money back. I'm happy for the club to keep it. I'm happy to kind of help if I am helping in any way. However, there's a balance.
That's you, though, Stuart. With all due respect, 100%. That's you.
Oh, no, definitely.
And especially in the current circumstances, there'll be hundreds of people who possibly cannot actually afford to say, well, keep it. You know, that's not a problem. As much as they might want to, finances may dictate otherwise. Now, I think it's a double-edged sword here because the club didn't have to do anything.
No, definitely not.
At all. No. I mean, they could have just sat there and thought, oh, well, you know, we didn't expect this to happen either, and at least you can watch the games, and let's hope in a few months' time we can all be sitting back in the stadium. So they didn't have to do anything. And once you start to offer something, as you've just done, really, you've seen there's a hole there, and it says, hang on a minute, that's not very fair because there's four of us on a season. So in one way, they're trying to do something good, and on the other way, it's going to come back and bite them, isn't it?
They're damned if they do, they're damned if
exactly.
they don't, aren't they?
So were they better off just doing nothing?
No, and they're not in a win-win situation, let's be honest about it. They're not, are they? Because they're offering something that then people will naturally go, well, hold on a minute, what about me?
Mm.
And so, yes, there is a black hole. But maybe the club are looking at that. Maybe Danny's looking at it and thinking, well, maybe we should do something extra where there's, say, families involved or people where, you know, you've got more than one season ticket in a household or are only using one code to stream, et cetera, et cetera. So I think maybe we've got to give a bit of time for the club to maybe elaborate a bit more and see what the offering is. Mm. And again, look, in 3 months' time, in 4 months' time, God willing, we might be back in the ground and it may
be problem,
forgotten.
This is the problem, mate, is that we're all in the unknown. Terry, it doesn't matter what you do for a living. We're all in that unknown. And what do we invest in? Where do we invest our money, if you like, and our stock, etc.? What's going to sell? What isn't going to go? It doesn't matter what you do for a living. We're all in this unknown territory, aren't we? So with Orient, I mean, the budget-wise, they don't really know if crowds are going to be invited back. We all hope they are, but we could be sitting here in 12 months' time in exactly the same situation. We don't know. So very hard for them to budget forward and say, well, this time next season we'll be accumulating XYZ million pound and we'll be spending this, etc. It's almost an impossible job. You're guessing.
Yeah, of course it is.
You know, I mean, you guess anyway, but you are really guessing.
And the club have been transparent, haven't they?
Yeah.
You know, with how much they expect to lose as a result of COVID, etc. So,
yeah.
Like you say, they could have just sat on the fence and not done anything
at all.
Well,
they're being brave, Stu, because I don't know what Terry thinks on this, but if you're going to sit there and say, look, let's say, for argument's sake, we've got 5,000 season ticket holders, and this thing drags on into the summer, how many of them are going to renew a season ticket? They're not. You're all human. You know, everyone's got the same thing. You're going to think, well, I can pay a tenner a match and watch it as it goes. I'll do that. Because if you're out for the day and you don't pay, you don't watch it. So Orient getting that lump sum up front could actually completely almost disappear. And then, of course, you're thinking, oh, goodness me, we were budgeting on at least 3,000 or 4,000 season ticket holders. We've ended up with 1,500.
You said it, Andy. No one knows. There's no perfect answer. There's no right or wrong answer at the moment, because if someone said, right, things are going to go back to pretty much normal in March, then you can budget for it. You can work numbers and. But as just we've said, they're trying to do a nice thing, but how long that will be for? Because as I say, if this goes on and on, they won't be able to do, you know, it's frightening, really, because you think Orient, by and large, are in a fairly solid position, if you can believe what they're saying about our finances and whatever. There's other clubs that this isn't going to be an issue in 4 or 5 months, because they're going to be out of business.
Well, you know, it's all relative, because obviously, yes, we've got investors coming in. Nigel's brought in more investors, etc., over recent months, etc. But every single one of these people and every single one of these sponsors is reliant on another individual or company, and all the way down, it's like a domino effect, isn't it? So, you know, as I say, I think it's very brave of the club to actually. I know they've already got a little bit of criticism and people writing in. I've read a couple of things about it. It's not fair on me. I'm, you know, £230, etc. But they didn't have to offer anything, and I'm wondering if it probably maybe wasn't the wisest thing to do.
I mean, how many people would have taken a view, say, in the summer when they could have bought a season ticket in the gallery at circa £400 or £450? They're streaming at a tenner. They could have not renewed their season ticket, paid £10 for every game, £230. They're a minimum of £170 better off as a result. Mm. I think, you know, if people are in a fortunate position to have bought a ticket like that and don't want the money back, then to a certain degree, it doesn't affect them as much, and they're doing it for the love of the football club. However, like you made out, there's a hell of a lot of people that can't afford to do that, and it does affect them. And this is some way of giving back, whether that's right or wrong. Should they have stayed where they were, you know, it's helping in some. It's good. There's going to be winners in it, and there's going to be losers. And like there is for all of us at the moment in business, and that's a relative. I own my own business. I don't know what's next week or the week after or in January or February.
All three of us own our own business.
And that's the thing, boat, isn't it? Yeah. You can't. It's very difficult to plan going forward, and it's no different.
Maybe they could do something in the short term where they say for the next, you know, you'll get money back for the next couple of months, and then we'll review it. I don't know if that's a viable proposition. I don't know.
Yeah, I just think that in trying to do the right thing, they might have opened up a can of worms and caused themselves.
He's trying to do something nice.
No, you shouldn't. Just be horrible. It's worked for me.
The club's damned if they do, they're damned if they don't. They're in a no-win situation, unfortunately. They're trying to do their best, and we try and be grateful.
Well, we do, and as I say, I mean, it's a good thing to have done, but as I say, let's hope it doesn't come back and bite them a little bit. Any predictions for the coming Saturday's match, Stu?
Oh, Colchester are a good side. Let's not kind of forget that. You know, I know that Glenn said he didn't think they were as good as Newport, but I'll stick my neck on the line and say 2-1 away win.
Yeah, Terry?
Well, the thing about our team is that you can never rule out anything. You know, we're a little bit sort of, you know, we could go there and win. It's a difficult one to call. I think personally, I'd be a bit disappointed if we don't come away with at least a draw. So I'll sit on the fence and say it'll be a little bit of 1-1 draw.
Yeah, it's one of those matches. I think, you know, they could just as easily nick it as lose 3-0. So it's one of those. I'm going to go for 2-2. All right. And in saying that, I'd like to thank Terry for coming in at such short notice. That was really kind of you. Not all heroes wear capes. Some wear whatever. But thank you, Terry. And Stuart, thank you as usual. Great
thank
company.
You.
And thanks to Glenn. I know he was stuck on the motorway for so long, poor soul. And
it's lovely. I finally got that apology for taking my lovely corner slot in the changing room.
You did. Thanks to Dave Victor for his report. Thanks, obviously, to legendary John Mackey. And Terry's just smashing the place up there if you heard any noises. We'll leave you with Status Quo. We'll catch you next week, everybody. Have a great time.
on the hour across Brentwood and Billericay. This is